Yeah, let's just continue and let's do Start Ugly.
Yeah.
So it's...
It was kind of leading into it.
Yeah, good. Okay, episode one. Let me see if everything still works. Man, that's good. I'm having fun already.
So it's already working.
It's already working. Yeah, yeah.
We might even get an MP3 out of it.
Okay. Yeah, that's the goal. So, okay. That's officially now episode one. Okay, that's correct. Fantastic. Beautiful. Good. Okay.
So.
Yeah, like we said in the awesome teaser.
Which one? The first one or the second one?
The second one. The first official one. We landed on some themes basically, and one of them was basically start ugly. Like, don't be afraid to ship whatever you have in some sense. And why do you think that's important? Or why do you? Or maybe a follow up question to that, like. Why do you think are so many devs that we work with have hang-ups with that?
I mean, to me, every time I ship something that I know it's incomplete, alpha or whatever, it is a very vulnerable space. So a lot of it is just the insecurity of, I know I could do better. But that's the thing, that you can always do better, right? So given that way of approaching the problem, you will never ship. So you have to be...
Perfection, right?
Yeah, there is no perfection. And you have to find the comfort in shipping something that you know it's imperfect. There is a...
What's the ugliest thing you ever shipped?
Woo! Oh, my Lord. That's a tough question. Everything. I know what it is. The tunnel with the echo is going to be interesting.
We're going to make it. They have to suffer.
Now we're walking through a tunnel that is dug into the shore of the island. So it's going to be a bit echoey.
No, it's going to be perfect.
It's going to be fine.
We're going to fix it in post.
the ugliest thing I've shipped, I accidentally shipped the Honeypot wallet. Because I was testing publishing stuff on Substore, so it was radically incomplete. So there was complete stuff that was, like, for example, if you published an event with your... So the Honeypot wallet is an EIP60, an ATSAC wallet, and if you were to publish a token and the publishing failed because you didn't have internet or whatever, it didn't save it locally, or it didn't even retry to save the tokens. So it's very much probably the ugliest thing I've shipped.
But do you regret it, or you still think it's the right approach? Get it out and iterate.
I think it's always the right approach to ship something, especially if you say this is broken in these ways, or you know, in the
Super Testament is great at that.
Super Testament is the archetype. If you disclose that, okay, this doesn't work, or this other part is broken, or like the onboarding process of the Honeypot wallet says you will probably lose all your money that you put here. but the cool thing is that if you ship something that is broken, it's much more likely that you will get bullied into fixing it, rather than if you just keep it local and say, oh, once I fix this bug, I will...
Try to aim for perfection.
Yeah, you'll get to the point where you will always find something that can be more optimized. You will always find something that could be nicer, that could be more closer to what you think it should be. So you can always find an excuse to not ship. So I think not shipping is never the approach, really.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean... who was it? I think it was David Heinemeier Hansen, of all people. The guy who hated Bitcoin starting in 2010. He changed his mind, by the way.
Changed his mind. I like him a lot.
But I think it comes from him, right? Happiness is shipping. And so try to bring it into a state where it's just like you can ship it as fast as possible. Like, just basically, it's the super ugliest pre-alpha MVP and just ship it. And I think to be fair, a lot of people in the NASA space did that right. Like I remember the first version of NASA boat, which was like ugly as fuck, and I was like, oh my lord, what is this? But it worked. and they iterated, and now it's the stuff works, and it's everything is way better, and all those kind of things. And I was just surprised. Like I think also the theme, of course, starting ugly is very meta for this thing. You know, like it's gonna be. we're trying to practice what we preach, but I think it's very important to make it real. Like it doesn't matter if it's beautiful. It doesn't matter if it's perfect. Once it's real, that's basically what you said as well. It's like you're gonna get feedback. You're gonna be, you know, like bullied into fixing things and all those kind of things. And once you push anything out, it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter if it's software or a piece of artwork or a piece of writing or even an idea or what have you. Then it's real. Then it's in other people's heads. Then other people know that this exists. And then it kind of takes a life. It takes on a life of its own. And I think that's why it's so important to just ship it out. Don't try to, you know, like make it perfect. And it's not about you. It's about the idea. And it's about the thing. It's not about you.
and the thing is that once the idea or the software, whatever it is, it's out there, it can evolve. Whereas if it's contained just within your computer, just within your mind, the environment is not as aggressive. It cannot evolve as fast.
Yeah.
It doesn't have as many inputs. And I also think there's something to be said about the fact that we are our habits. And if you get in the habit of not shipping.
Oh, absolutely.
Then become a person that doesn't ship.
It's also, you know, about the I don't know if it was a study or whatever, or I have no idea. But basically they had two groups of students, and I think it was like a pottery class or something like that. And one group of students got the task of, you will be graded by your masterpiece, and you have like 6 months to make your masterpiece. Mm. And you can do whatever, but at the end, one masterpiece has to come out. And the other group of students was told, it doesn't matter what you do, you will be graded by the amount of pottery things that you produce, by the amount of whatever, vases you push out. And the group that did basically shipped constantly, they actually produced the masterpieces. They actually, like the things were so much better, because it's just about, you have to get into the habit of getting stuff out and just doing the next thing and getting that out and so on and so forth. So
yeah, no surprise. I actually experienced that very, very much personally in the past few months or in the past year.
I mean, you started and abandoned, I don't know, so like many more projects than everyone else combined, I think.
No, but that's so for example, what happened with Highlighter? I think Highlighter is such a good example of what not to do. because with Highlighter, I started with one idea, which was your idea. the purple text orange highlights. So I started with that idea, and then it morphed into this other thing, and then it morphed into this other thing. And it went through like six different products, so different value props. Yeah. And it got to the point where I rewrote the code so many times without actually shipping it, because it was kind of in prototype stage constantly. It got to the point where everybody that interfaced with Highlighter is confused on what the fuck is Highlighter. And even I was completely confused on what is Highlighter. And it's got to the point where I haven't shipped the code of Highlighter in like three different revisions. So like the product that is live now, the one that I have locally, it's like completely different thing. Completely different thing. But every time I think, I need to publish this,
Are you so afraid, Pablo? It's because it has an awesome domain, that's why.
That's the thing, right? the stakes are very high. but every time I think about shipping, I think I haven't shipped for so long this code base that once I ship, it must be a masterpiece. It must be fucking perfect.
Yeah.
And that prevents me from shipping. It sends me, you know, let's just go and work on...
Which prevents you from happiness, because happiness is shipping.
If happiness is shipping, well. 100%.
No, see, but, so we are also not perfect.
Yeah. You know, so. No, but I find it fascinating that I am the same person when I'm writing code on Highlighter, and I am the same person when I'm writing code on whatever it might be, on OLAS, on NDK, on whatever it is.
Yeah.
But in NDK, I can cut a release just like that. On OLAS, I can ship just like that. In Highlighter, I get like stage fright.
Okay, it's this big thing. Okay, I see. Yeah, yeah. But I think that's why it's important that we kind of talk about all those things, because we, when a lot of the things that are the right thing to do are actually also hard. And I think we know this from the Bitcoin world where, you know, like being self-sovereign, for example, it's actually hard. Mm. But you have to kind of, it's like getting up in the morning and going for a run, or getting up in the morning and jumping into a fucking cold plunge or whatever. It's like, it's hard every time. You have to find ways to force yourself every time in some sense, you know? And I mean, on the Bitcoin side, and that's also, it's part of this experiment right now, which I hope we will land on some things on the Nostra side that are condensed, almost like memes, like we have in the Bitcoin space, right? Where it's like, everyone kind of knows that shit is hard and it takes a lot of responsibility, but we landed on, you know, not your keys, not your coins, for example, and all those kind of things. And everyone kind of, there is a mutual shared understanding of how things work, how things should work, and what is the implication of this? What is the implication of not your keys, not your coins? The implication is actually you have to sit down and do the things and take the responsibility of actually, you know, taking care of your stuff and all those kind of things. And I think on the Nostra side, my hope is that we land on similar things. I care mostly about the developer perspective, mostly about what does it mean to build in the Nostra ecosystem? It means shipping something that's super ugly and super imperfect and very weird and very confusing, and just pushing it out the door and seeing what happens. It's like, Nostra is the testnet. I mean, everything that happened so far shows this very clearly. You know, it's like, there is no testnet. There's like, Nostra is the testnet. Just push it out and treat it as such.
Yeah, very much so. And I definitely agree. I definitely agree that landing on the memes, on this knowledge, it's super important. Because it's hard, and we've seen it even within software engineering, where we see the same people making the same category of mistake.
Yeah.
And they don't have the words. Like that's something that I keep coming back to. They don't have the words to explain why that approach is wrong. They just work on one approach. They find the limitations, the drawbacks of that approach, and then they change to an approach that is different, but it's within the same category of mistakes. And then they have to work for a few more months to reach the same conclusion. And it's just because they don't have the category of what is the mistake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, to be fair, it's also, I think, hard and confusing if you come from a regular, you know, client-server architecture, kind of everything is a REST API style of development, and kind of find your footing in the Nostra way of doing things. And there absolutely is a Nostra way of doing things, 100%. Just like there is a Bitcoin way of doing things. And I mean, one of the comparisons that we often, that we have been drawing over the last couple of months is like, especially, for example, if you build a Bitcoin product, once you go down the path of being a custodian for someone else's money, you're already, you know, like, you're not only with like one foot in hell, you're already in hell.
100%.
Because you're gonna, you know, like everything that it will bite you in the, it's such a small decision basically, in some sense, you know, like technically speaking maybe, or it doesn't feel like such a big thing, but it's like a make or break decision. It's if you wanna actually, don't turn yourself into Coinbase. Mm-hmm. Like if you hold money for someone else, you're gonna be as shitty as Coinbase down the line. There's no escape from that.
Yeah, the success case of when you make that one bad decision, that one fork in the road, the success stage is living a life that you were trying to live the opposite of that life, right? Like, I don't think Brian Armstrong wanted to run a compliance department and a spying agency with chain analysis and all these things.
Yeah, you have to. Someone with a very large stick is at the door at all times.
You have to, and it's super interesting. You used to say a lot, and this is a No Solutions exclusive.
Oh, there's gonna
because I never told you this, but you used to say a lot that Lynn Alden said at some stage. I think it was in Oslo or something. If you're a Bitcoin company, you don't want to hold your customers' keys.
Exactly.
You don't want to hold your...
Yeah, I love that quote. Yeah.
And I remember at the time I was working on Insect Bunker.
Yeah, I told you it was a shit idea.
Yeah, well, but I mean, yes. So I had to go through like the whole process of saying, fuck, this is so bad.
Yeah.
this could get ugly so fast.
Yeah.
And then finding the ways of shutting it down in the right way of shutting it down, which from my perspective, shutting it down meant breaking it. not saying that I was not going to work on that because I didn't want other people to work on that because I think it's not a bad idea for me. It's just a bad idea.
Yeah, I agree.
But it's a very compelling idea.
You make
problem.
It so easy for everyone.
The onboarding is solved.
But that's the thing, and I think we don't have good. I mean, not your keys, not your coins is the closest we have, but it's like the you cannot abstract this away meaningfully. Basically, it's like freedom implies responsibility, and you will need to be responsible on the Bitcoin side for your keys, for example. You know, like you need to be. There's other things like there's similar examples where they're just again like there is no solution. Like Suco's triangle is a good one. It's like naming, there is no, you can't have handles in Nostr without a trusted third party. You can't have like, their GG, whatever it is. And it's impossible. It's an impossible problem. So there literally
it's a provable, unsolvable problem.
So there literally are no solutions. And the trade-off we landed on with, you know, like NIPO5 and those kind of things, it's like, okay, we rely on DNS as the trusted third party, basically. And again, I think that all the verified services, I also think it's actually a bad idea
100%.
Because it's like, it should be your own domain. Like that would be the idea. but anyway,
I digress. Understanding it as a discoverability of how do you get to the pub key in the same way that DNS is how do you get to the IP address.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not that is your identity.
Yes.
It's your pub key is your identity and you arrive to the pub key via the NIPO file.
Yeah. But I want to come back to the quote of Lynn Alden. A Bitcoin company doesn't want to hold your Bitcoin. And I think it hits the nail on the head. And I think that's what makes it so different. But it doesn't mean that Bitcoin companies can't exist. And it doesn't mean that Bitcoin companies can't make money. You just have to think about things differently. And I mean, of course, you know, there's like collaborative custody solutions and there's a ton of financial services that actually do not need to hold your money for you. There's still lots of things that you can do and make money on. And I think the reason why I go into detail with all of this on the Bitcoin side, because I think that absolutely the same thing applies to the Nostr side. Absolutely the same thing. It's not necessarily about money, but it's like you can provide useful services without holding your customers hostage.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we have to kind of really nail. And I think that's the vision and the story we really have to nail, because it's actually possible. And it's not like a pipe dream or whatever. It's like it's you can create something and build something that's super valuable, that's super useful, and you can make money, and you can do it without requiring anyone's permission. And that's kind of the story I want to tell. And that's I was surprised that a lot of developers have a hard time seeing that and also have a hard time believing that. And to stick with the theme of, you know, like starting ugly, I think you have to take this leap of faith
100%.
And just go for it and try it out and iterate along the way. Because I can't tell you yet, like, what is the cookie cutter recipe, which we have for Web 2.0, for example, where it's like you raise a bunch of VC money and so on, and you do all that.
Capture
and
a bunch of users.
Yeah, exactly. And you squeeze them and like then everything goes to shit. And that's kind of the cycle the web has been in so far. And I really think we can break the cycle. All the platforms so far, everything that was great, it all went to shit. It all, and I think it is because of the monetization thing, you know? It is because you have to actually capture everyone and squeeze everyone.
It's unavoidable.
It's unavoidable.
You just can't escape those incentives.
But it's not unavoidable from a business perspective. There is great multi-generational businesses. There's great multi-generational fucking restaurants, you know? Where it's like this restaurant existed for like 300 years and it's still like, you know, the whatever inn in like some valley, and they still make great food and they still make a profit. And I think we can do that in cyberspace. I really think we can do that. And that's kind of what I wanna, you know, like hopefully figure out along the way what is the recipe to actually do that, and how can you do it without falling into all the dark patterns that, you know, the current iteration of the web brought us.
Yeah, to me it's interesting because you can build everything surrounding Nostr, but then if you try to monetize in the old ways, you're actually just building a company in the legacy system. It's just kind of maybe, like Minds.com, I think is kind of it's a good example where it was kind of Nostr for a while, but not really. Sadly, we have many of those examples right now of companies that are kind of Nostr, but in reality it's a little bit adjacent.
Kind of, start out well and then turn themselves more and more into Nostr in name only.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that comes from fear. Like, if you think that your users are only going to choose you because they don't have a fucking choice,
what does that say about you? Coming back to the restaurant analogy, it's like, you know, all the users, like all the patrons come in, and you just lock the door, and it's like you have to eat. You know, I'm only gonna let you out if your bill is $100 or higher. You know, like that's how the web currently operates. It's very weird.
But I think. And that's the thing. I think we don't yet, because Nostr is so nascent, and even Bitcoin is so young, that we don't have good examples. Because when I've talked about monetization on Nostr, a few times I get the question of, can you point to an example of a profitable company that is doing 7, 8, whatever number of figures? And it's like, no, bro, like we have like 10 users. What are you talking about?
Hey, we have a strong circular economy of like the same 20 people stepping one Bitcoin around over and over again. What do you mean? It's like flourishing.
But at the same time, Bitcoiners... No,
but you know what you can point to? You can point to things actually making money. And you can point to that in most other areas. I go to the value for value side and the artists and so on. Like, no one on Spotify makes any money, no artist.
Yeah.
But if you switch to Nostr and you put your music on Nostr, you will make like $20 a week or something in saps and shit. And it feels like nothing, but it's like 10,000x what you get on Spotify. Literally, it's literally like for the smaller artists, it's literally like 10,000x. It's like, because they get absolutely nothing. And I think on the business and kind of monetization side, I still think I kind of agree with you that it's way too early to go too deep into this, like how could we monetize and so on. But the fact of the matter is that we have a lot of paid services that actually do make money. Hmm. I'm not saying they're profitable, but we have paid relays, we have, you know, like paid media upload thingies and all those kind of things, paid verification stuff and so on.
Subvertisement of Blossom servers.
I was surprised to get that.
How insane is that?
and so money is flowing through the system, and it's not much yet, but I don't think you need a lot of kind of imagination to see where this could go with, you know, the user base, 100 access, 1,000 access and so on. And I mean, we have all the room for growth in the world, because 100%. Like going from 20 users to like 8 billion, that's a lot of percentage points, you know?
Yeah, that was kind of where I was going, that Bitcoiners tend to lean into Austrian economics and praxeology and first principles thinking and all these things, and then they tell you, oh no, you have to show me the point to the example that works right now. No, you have to extrapolate, and you have to imagine, and you have to... To me, it's all about like self-confidence. You have to have the confidence that you can create something so valuable that someone will be willing to pay without being forced to pay.
Yeah.
And what do you say about the artists and the value for value? I think that is such a perfect example of... because the way I see it is, we have all this VC money, we have all this, just in the legacy world, of companies that they don't really need to make a profit. You know, it's the cheap money keeps them alive. And the game they're playing is just a different game. They're not really trying to create utility. They're just trying to pump numbers, right? To just, yeah, just go get the get to the next round. And the whole point is to create a unicorn, right?
Yeah,
the whole
sure.
point
yeah,
is to go, well, yeah. now a unicorn is nothing. Like, a unicorn is 1 bill, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You want
to get to
100
bill. The whole point is to sell out, kind of. The whole point is to sell out.
Exactly. And I think that model just doesn't work anymore. It's just that model will die, both in the legacy and in Nostra will never happen. And I think the model that...
I mean, in some sense, it's also very much bound to easy money, right? In some...
100%. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
A lot of it.
Exactly. It is only possible because of the cheap money.
Yeah.
And I just don't see... But I see companies trying to create that same model, to replicate that same model within Nostra. And I just think that will never exist. I think it will be corner stores.
Yeah, yeah, I hope so. I hope so. The picture I have in my mind, I mean, the kind of the slogan I try to run with, but I already got some pushback because it's like too childish. But it's like you can create a lemonade stand in cyberspace, and the reason why I like it is because you don't need. Unless you live in Canada or whatever kind of, you know, communist state, you don't need a license and you don't need a permission slip to open up a lemonade stand. You could even be like, you know, 8 years old and you just get the lemonade stand going and it's also, I think it's a nice metaphor because you don't know what this could turn into. Like if you're really into it, this could turn into a profitable business. And kind of that's what I want to get out there. That like there is like probably 500,000 fucking JavaScript devs right now that could start something that produces a set flow. And they don't know about it. So I just want them to know. Because making money is awesome, you know, like capitalism is awesome. And we have all the right tools now, I think, to actually do that and pursue that. And I think coming back to the restaurant analogy, like a busy street with an awesome restaurant on it is beneficial to absolutely everyone. Mm. It's beneficial to the street, it's beneficial to the restaurant owner, and it's beneficial to the competition as well.
100%.
And I think that's what we have in Nostra. That's why I like the busy street with lots of restaurants so much, because it's like, if you don't like it, you can get up and leave and go somewhere else. And I think that should be true across the whole Nostra ecosystem. If you don't like your wallet, use another wallet. If you don't like your client, use another client. If you don't like your relay, use another relay.
Yeah.
And so on and so forth. And yeah, I think that's the right way to think about it. It's a win-win-win situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other part of the coin, I mean, we are of age enough to remember when the internet didn't used to everything look exactly the same.
Yeah.
And when you are designing a product that needs to work for pretty much any single person in the world, regardless of their
demographic.
Yeah, it caters
to the lowest common denominator.
You must create, by definition, a mediocre product.
Yeah.
You can't say, I'm going to create this one client that is very weird, but these 1,000 or 10,000 or 1 million people absolutely love it. Everybody else hates it and thinks it's shit. No, you have to create the same thing for every single person. And it's so uncreative. It's so boring. The street looks worse.
It's boring by default, by definition.
By definition, it's boring. It's the difference between a shopping mall. And just the street with all the restaurants.
That's a good point as well. And I mean, we spoke about these kind of topics a couple of times already. So for me, the same examples I used in the past come to mind. But it's like you might be the best person in the whole fucking town or whatever to create like an awesome chef's knife. And you might not have, like, the goal is not to compete with the whole world and take over, like, the whole kind of knife market of the world. You produce the best chef knife in the area, and you have a lot of customers that really like you and cherish you, and you make a profit, and that's it. And I think we kind of already have the same for various things online, basically. It's like, you know, like this, the one little tool that one guy built a long while ago, and your whole fucking workflow relies on it, and you're one of the, like, I don't know, 150 users that the thing has. You would pay a lot of money for this thing to exist in perpetuity. And I feel like lots of devs are, they really suck at monetizing that, kind of. Mm. And they suck at asking for money as well, and they suck at, I mean, most value for value people suck at the ask part of it. But it's that's why I try to bully absolutely everyone into doing something as a lot of the free-to-play games did, where it's like, if you want to buy the skin for like $10,000, let them buy the skin for $10,000. If you love the game, you're going to do it. There's lots of people that... It doesn't have to make sense for you. It doesn't have to make sense at all. But let the people support you in whatever way they see fit, and also make it appealing and make it easy and so on. And so the only person that listened to me so far was actually Million from Primal.
Yeah.
And that's where the whole legend and thing came from and so on. And it actually works.
He was very against the idea.
He was very against it and very reluctant and so on.
Very funny.
But you know, like it's, I told him, just ship it. Like what's the worst that can happen? You know, it's like, start ugly, start small, and just ship it, push it out. If it sucks, and if you get blowback, and if it's like, no one does it, or whatever, then just revert it, and that's it. And I think it also, it comes from a point of fear, like you said before, like a very similar fear of, like, why do people not ship the things that they actually built?
Yeah.
It's just try it out, and do those kind of things. And I think, you know, like, if you've been embedded in the wider gaming ecosystem, like this stuff works. And I'm not talking about the darker sides of gamifying everything and putting gambling into things and so on, because that's where it's, you know, can also go. But I think that's what Patreon really showed, and also Substack really showed. Because the reason why Substack worked is not because they added paywalls, which they did like years later. The reason why Substack worked is because you want to support this journalist or whatever, and they made it really easy to do that. And also they used the protocol as the delivery mechanism. They used email as their delivery. And I think that's the recipe. And most people still kind of don't believe in it. So I'm frustrated about that, but we'll see. We're gonna make it anyway.
I remember when a bit of a story, but when I started climbing, I was climbing with who's now my wife. And she could climb stuff that I couldn't. And she would tell me, dude, your shoes are too big. You're like, you can't climb with those shoes. I was like, no, I just suck. There's no fucking way. And she's like, dude, let's just go to like the store and buy new shoes. But, and the next day we just went and got new shoes, and it was actually that simple. It was actually a retarded way, and that's it. Like, but it's so easy to get caught up in your mind and thinking, oh, it's gotta be like all this complexity and all this financial engineering, and oh, I will move this money here, and I will like, and sometimes it could be just the left side of the curve approach the right approach.
Yeah, I mean. Ask people and kind of explain it. I think ProtonMail, for example, did this well. It's like, which I like as an example, because it's also like the email was basically fully captured. But we kind of turned the curve, I feel like, you know? And there was a need in the market, and some people came, and again, like Proton, I think, is a great example. There's many others. But it's like, okay, like it's not going to be free, period. It's going to be, we're going to focus on encryption, we're going to focus on privacy, but for this to work, like, you're going to have to pay. It's going to be, there is no other way. Like, either you are the product and we spy on all your emails and we, you know, ram advertising down your throat and so on. If you don't want that, you're going to have to pay for it. And it's the same for, you know, on the Nostr side, for example, it's going to be the same for media hosting and so on. If you want to do a YouTube on Nostr, if you're a creator and your livelihood depends on that and so on, free hosting is kind of out of the question. You have to figure out how to
take
care of that. Yeah. Because otherwise, like, you know, otherwise you're back to selling user data or going down the advertisement route and all those kind of things.
Yeah,
and
so, I going back to DHH, I really like the approach of Basecamp and the stuff that they work on with Hey.com. They did kind of the same.
Yeah, exactly.
And people kept on asking, oh, yeah, but how are you going to make money? We are going to
charge
users for money, and then we'll
we'll have money.
Like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
What kind of question is that? But so many people would get hung up on, but how are you going to make money?
Yeah.
Well, like, dude.
No, absolutely.
But if you think about it, the other way is the weird way. It's just been normalized by advertisement and by Google.
Yeah.
But the way of, oh, no, it's everything is free, we're just going to mine your data. Right. And that is very complex. Yeah. That is very fucking weird.
Yeah. I mean, people, we kind of know all that, but it feels like we forgot. And we have all these sayings for a reason, right? Like, there is no free lunch. There literally isn't. Like, if you think there is, then you're being fooled. And you're fooling yourself, and you don't see the hidden cost. And it's the same... It's the same thing here. And so I hope that, I agree. I think Basecamp got a lot of things right. And I think the next hang up is about open source. How could I make any money if I open source the thing and like someone else could steal it from me and, and then everything is terrible. What would be your answer to that? I have my own answers.
To me, just the a brand brings a lot of moat. I see a lot of discussion around the what is your motive, but the source code is, and especially now with like AI, and now everybody's fucking writing code with AI. The source code itself, I don't think is what's protecting the company and the revenue. I want to buy the stuff that I use from the people that make it, not from the people that don't really understand
it. Not from the people that copy it. Okay. Yeah.
What is your answer?
Yeah, I think I have multiple answers to that particular question. I think I think first of all, it's the same issue that it's a position of fear. And I think if someone copies you, they only copy the state, they copy a snapshot of what is a process. And they cannot copy the process of developing the thing and maintaining the thing and running the thing and so on. And so why is there only like, we see it in all successful open source software, it's the same pattern. The team that is actually building the thing has like the 99% of the share of the forks in terms of what are the users actually running. We see it for Firefox, we see it for Thunderbird, we see it for WordPress, all those kind of things. And WordPress is actually a great example of how you can think about building a business around open source software while the full thing remaining open source at all times, because running a WordPress instance is actually work. And so the service you can provide is making it easy for paying users to run a WordPress instance. And you develop the software, and so it all kind of goes together like this and so on. So I think I think it's a similar hang-up that the NFT people have. You're actually not selling the JPEG. you can't sell the JPEG. It's like the JPEG is worthless.
It's just there.
It's like you can copy. That's not where the value comes from. You can copy the JPEG at zero marginal cost, and it's true for
literally every time it's rendered, it has been copied already.
Exactly, and so the value, and I think, and that's why I wanted to, continue these conversations and explore this together, because I think we as a society basically are very confused about what can you actually sell online and what can't you sell online. Because people are actually trying to sell JPEGs, and they're like, that's so fucking retarded, it's beyond belief. And so we have to figure out what is actually the thing that can't be copied, what is the service that you can provide, and that's the thing you charge money on. And so, we discussed this many times in the past, but for example, if the thing you're selling involves compute, you can sell that in a straightforward manner. And the same goes for storage space, which is, very similar to compute. It's actually, what are the actually scarce resources? And most of the things that are useful, they involve something along those lines of a scarce resource. And you can monetize that. The code is like, that's not where the value is. That's not where, you're actually not selling the code like you did, I don't know, like in 1996 with WinRAR or whatever it was. You know what I mean? I feel like we learned all that. But yeah, I don't know. I think it comes from a position of being afraid and a position of worry and so on. And I think that's not a good position to be in. I think you will, if you actually build something of value and you actually have active users and you have actually people that cherish your product, you will be able to get monetary support for that, just because, basically, in some sense.
Yeah, I think it's one of the notes that we have of the things that we want to discuss. But I think there is such a thing as trying to monetize too early, as well as trying to monetize too late,
yeah.
of not thinking enough or of thinking too much about monetization. And particularly within Noster, I think within Noster, everything, like the right approach, we still don't know. We are finding it out. We are exploring it. If you try to say, oh, I'm going to monetize right now via this way, and it's just copying how it's been done before, you are closing yourself off to new ideas.
No,
there's
absolutely.
An opportunity cost to the fact that you are going for the, I'll just put some advertisement on this product or whatever. I just don't think that's the approach.
Oh, absolutely. I would argue even that we still don't know what SEPs are, for example.
Mm, yeah, and, completely
and,
agree.
Like, they're definitely not like just payments. I think they are also definitely not like just tips. I think they're also not just super likes or what have you, and all those kind of things. And I think we can do a lot of stuff just by, like, we can do so much exploration just by money seamlessly flowing through the system. And that's very, very much underexplored. Mm-hmm. But we're gonna continually explore it. So that's the whole point of the whole thing. I think that might be a nice way to end the first one. I'm getting sunburned already and tired, so I'm like.
And now we're gonna start going uphill too.
I'm very close to having a stroke, basically. So it's probably a great place to stop. But how did you think? Was it useful? Maybe
I think so.
For us?
Yeah, I think so. Right. I think it can be. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what people say.
We didn't,
it is the first episode, after all.
Yeah, we didn't talk about StarCraft too much, so I apologize.
I mean, Fiachev is obviously asleep by now.
But yeah, no. My goal is to continue to kind of pick your brain and discuss these things, and hopefully going forward with. Not too much inside the baseball, kind of, you know, like I really hope to open up the conversation and just bring, like, you know, random fucking JavaScript developers in that just have no idea about Bitcoin, have no idea about how all this works, but maybe are attracted to, you know, like the making money part of it are compelled to. Maybe as a last thought before we enter the hellish part, the reason I think why people should really care, or developers should really care about Noster, is that you as a developer can actually not be rug pulled. And that's a very underappreciated kind of aspect of the whole system. Because there's many people, we should probably stop doing that. there's many people that developed, you know, on top of the Reddit API, on top of the YouTube API, on top of whatever API. And then things change, the company changes, the API changes, full rug pull, like
their
now
business model
and,
change.
Yeah, all those kind of things. And the little app or thing or service that you worked the last 10 years on, completely, like the foundation is, it's a literal rug pull. The rug is pulled under you and you're done for. And I think, you know, like if our intuition is right, on Noster this should never happen. Like, you can actually build a long lasting, literally multi-generational business on top of Noster, and I think that's very, very compelling. Yeah, we have to figure out a ton of things still, like we have to figure out, like it's still very, very imperfect. It's still ugly. Noster started ugly. We're still in the ugly phase, but I feel like we're getting out of the ugly phase, and I think we can, have something. It really feels to me like it. We have the chance of building the next iteration of the internet and hopefully not repeat the mistakes of the past.
Yeah, absolutely. To me, I've been on the indie maker community for decades at this point, and their one hang-up every single time, it's never about the technical, how do I build the product? That is never the question around the indie maker community. It's always, how do I get users? How do I do Facebook ads? Because that's always the solution. Oh, it's just run Facebook ads, be very active on Twitter, reply to people. It's always, always about the fucking distribution of your product. And in the indie writers community, on fictional writers, it's exactly the same problem. You go to a writer's conference, it's never about honing your craft. It's always distribution. How do I get distribution? And that is the one thing that Noster completely solves.
Yeah.
Completely.
You get it for free, basically.
You get it for free. Yeah. I launched Olas, what was it, like 6 weeks ago? It immediately had users.
Yeah.
It immediately had content. There was immediately a reason to install the app and to engage with the app.
Yeah.
Because there was something there. It wasn't just dummy text or, you know, Reddit style, make it till you fake it till you make it style. Yeah. It was actual content by actual people.
Yeah.
And that is so fucking powerful. Yeah. That is so powerful. And is you're building on something that, like you said, it cannot be. Why did Zynga work? Right? They Zynga built on top of Facebook, so they had the users, but then Facebook can fuck them.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Immediately. At you are building everything based on someone else's land, and they can take it away at any point. With Innosta, you get that is of course is way smaller than Facebook and Twitter, obviously, but you get the same dynamics. And I think that if you extrapolate, if you do the game theory, there is going to be more and more. And to me, one of the things that shocked me a few times already is companies that have been at the social network game, trying to create their own dynamics.
Trying to create from
which
scratch.
Which is fucking insanely hard.
Yeah.
Already coming to Nostra.
Yeah.
And we have a few.
That's a very good sign.
A good example.
That's a very good sign.
We have a few examples of companies that are pre-seed Nostra. They predate Nostra.
Yeah.
And they are coming to Nostra.
Yeah.
To me, that is absolutely fascinating. Yeah. And that gravity... Yeah. Only increases.
I agree. Awesome. Fantastic. Thanks, Pablo, for suffering with me through those 45 minutes.
That was good.
I think that was good. So, yeah, we're going to try to do it again. And, yeah, we're going to ship it as soon as we can. So
as
that's
soon
the plan.
As we have internet.
It's ugly, we know. And let's see if the recording actually worked, and let's see if you can understand stuff. But,
the sea.
Ah, background noise. That's fine. It's
like, no, that would be nice. Hearing the rocks.
We'll put everyone to sleep. All right. Take care.